Morning. It's good to see each of you this morning. This morning we're going to be studying the remainder of chapter 30 in the book of Genesis. So if you'll turn to the book of Genesis with us, we'll be in Genesis chapter 30. And we'll be looking at also chapter 31 this morning. So the end of chapter 30, the remainder of chapter 30 ends at chapter 31. On Wednesday we discussed how Jacob, who had earlier deceived his father Isaac to obtain the blessing, was deceived himself by Laban. And the way that Laban deceived him was by giving him his oldest daughter, Leah. And that it was a very deceitful thing that he had done to give him Leah when he had worked hard for 7 years to obtain Rachel, the woman that he loved. Laban made him complete his week with Leah. He actually instructed him to work how many more years for him? Seven more. And so to gain Rachel's hand in marriage also, he had to work seven more years. So a total of 14 years here he is working for Laban, and he gains two wives, Leah and Rachel. The Lord saw that Leah was unloved, but Rachel was barren. And with Leah, with her being unloved, we looked at some of the statements of Leah on Wednesday. And they're very interesting statements that when a child was born, she would make a statement that really tied into the name of the child. But those statements really pointed to her having a reverence to God, having a wanting to thank God and being so blessed by being given a son. But also, she felt unloved. And with each child, it seems that she wants to be loved by Jacob. And that love was not reciprocated, obviously, as he loved Rachel more than her. But Rachel was barren. Leah's statements are very interesting, though, as we go through. And we've studied so far, and we have a few more this morning, too. At the beginning of chapter 30, Rachel is still unable to bear children. She makes this statement to Jacob and says, "Give me children or else I die." She's about had it. By that point, Leah had had four sons. She's had none. And Jacob's fire is kindled against his wife because he's practically saying, "It's not in my control. It's in God's control." And so you can see how Rachel feels about this. What does Rachel do to try to create a solution to her problem? "Take my maid. This will be your wife. And she'll bear children for me." And so she does that. She gives her Bilhah as a wife. And Bilhah actually has two children with Jacob. So those two children are Dan and Naphtali. So now she does have two children, but they're by her maid. They're not her own flesh. And then Leah, who at this point has stopped bearing children, gives Jacob her maid. And so another maid is given to Jacob in marriage. So now he has four wives. This maid of Leah's is named Zilpah. She's given to him as a wife, and she bears two children, Gad and Asher. As you look at verse 14, this is where we left off on Wednesday evening, verses 14 through 21. At this point, Rachel still has no children. And at this point also, Leah is not able to conceive at this moment. So let's look at verses 14 through 21. "Now in the days of the wheat harvest, Reuben went and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, 'Please give me some of your son's mandrakes.' But she said to her, 'Is it a small matter for you to take my husband? Would you also take my son's mandrakes?' So Rachel said, 'Therefore, he may lie with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes.' And Jacob came in from the field that evening, when Jacob came in from the field in the evening, then Leah went out to meet him and said, 'Surely, you must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes.' So he went and he laid with her that night, and God gave heed to Leah, and she conceived, and bore Jacob a fifth son. Then Leah said, 'God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband.' So she named him Issachar. Leah conceived again and bore a sixth son to Jacob. Then Leah said, 'God has endowed me with a good gift. Now my husband will dwell with me, because I have borne him six sons.' So she named him Zebulun. Afterward, she bore a daughter and named her Dinah." As you look through this set of verses at the beginning here, a son, the firstborn son of Leah, Reuben, is out and he is gathering mandrakes. It is important for us to note what mandrakes are. What are mandrakes? I have a definition up here that's from Webster's Dictionary, and you can see one of several drawings that you could find online that are very similar in style and how they look. But the definition of a mandrake is that it was a Mediterranean herb of the nightshade family with large ovate leaves, greenish, yellow, or purple flowers, and a large, usually forked root resembling a human in form, and formerly credited with magical properties. If you do a search for this online and you look at some pictures of the images, it's very odd looking. Those of you that have done gardening, it reminds you a little bit of maybe a potato or a carrot, something where the root grows in the ground and it has a leafy foliage at the top. But the area where you see the root, the reason why it has the name mandrake is because it does in many ways resemble a man. It's very much like the head is the leafy foliage. Then it has like almost a shoulder area with like arms. And then it has the torso. And then sometimes it looks like the legs are crossed. And so you can understand why that name man correlates with why it's called a mandrake. So right here in this first definition, it mentions that they felt like it had magical properties at times. And it is very much a plant that was found in this area. It would have been very common to the area of Padanaram where they are. Now, the second definition, I think, even ties in even more, this B definition. The root of a mandrake was formerly used especially to promote conception as a cathartic or as a narcotic. So there actually have been times in history where they looked to the mandrake as having possibly abilities to help with fertility in some way or another. So this is not just an instance of, you know, Reuben's just out, you know, he's just gathering some vegetables and taking them back to his mother Leah, and Rachel wants some. Upon a first read, that's what you come across with. And there's just this bitterness between the two sisters, and that's really the root of it. Well, there is bitterness between the two sisters, but these mandrakes held value to them. Why? Leah can't conceive right now. Leah wants some mandrakes. Rachel can't conceive. She's barren. She wants to get the mandrakes too. And so both of them are looking to this mandrake as being something that could help them possibly to conceive and to make them more fertile, which is interesting. Rachel asked Leah for some of the mandrakes, which Reuben, Leah's son, had gathered in. In verse 15, Leah replies and says to her, "Is it a small matter for you to take my husband?" You can just hear right there the bitterness between them. "Is it a small matter for you to take my husband?" And then she says, "Would you take my son's mandrakes also?" And so they make a deal. And what is this deal that they come up with? That's right. When you read this, it's many ways like Rachel is prostituting out her husband. That's really what happens here. If you read, because in verse 16, when Jacob came in from the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." He was hired property at that point. And that was for the purpose of Leah wanted to have a child. But so did Rachel. Now, Rachel here, it seems, that is trusting more in the mandrakes than in actually having her husband to hopefully help have that occur. Is that she's trusting in the purpose and the what she believes the mandrakes can help her with. So it's very interesting to think about what is a mandrake, because it does tie into why they were valuing them so much. Because you had two women who were, at this time, unable to conceive and wanted to very badly. Does anyone have any comments about mandrakes that you would like to add to this?
Not so much the mandrakes.
Uh-huh.
Just the wording and the conversation there. I think it's a sad conversation, because it's a sad relationship between two sisters, and it's a bitter relationship. It's mm-hmm. a bitter competition. And I mean, in today's day and time, we call this whole family dysfunction.
And Jacob here is very much a pawn. I mean, he's just being used here for the purpose of...
Well, I think he's a willful pawn.
Sure.
I mean, I think anybody who's worked their way with all of us would stand up and say, here's who I am, here's what I believe, here's what we will do. He's supposed to be the man of the family. And he's allowing his wife's status.
But something else is interesting, too. Did God tell him that he would become a great multitude and become a great, I mean, all these things and promises as far as descendants being, you know, and so the promises of Abraham have been passed on to him. And it shows that even through man trying to conjure up all these plans of how this is all going to go, and we've seen this again, we saw this with Abraham and Sarah. You try to take it upon yourself to make point A go to point B to point C, God's plan is still going to work out. God's going to do what he wants to do, and man almost makes a mess of it in many ways. But God still is able to overall make it happen and make what his purpose has been. Yeah, Kenny? Yes. We talked about that before, haven't we? Yes. Very much so. There it is, Dale. There it is. Yes. I mean, you see the complication that arises from having, obviously, multiple wives and the type of toxic, you know, dealings that are happening here. Rose? Yeah. That's right. That's right. It shouldn't even be happening if it wasn't for Laban doing that. Let's look at some other points here also. It states here later on in this section that we just read, if you look at verse 18, then Leah said, God has given me my wages because I gave my maid to my husband. She has a son named Issachar. The name Issachar means reward. And then also she has another son with Jacob, and Leah's son is named Zebulun. And when she had Zebulun, the name Zebulun means honor, and Zebulun said, God has endowed me with a good gift. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. She's still hoping that Jacob will love her like he does Rachel. She still has hope. But also at the same point, I think you see a lot of righteousness on the part of Leah. I think you do throughout with her comments. She pays reverence to God over and over and over again for her sons. And also, you can just see throughout these statements with her sons, her six sons, she wants Jacob to love her. And she thinks that having another child will do that. But it doesn't seem to work out at all that Jacob's mind is being changed whatsoever. It's sad. We said that on Wednesday. But it is a great thing to see how she blesses or thanks God. God has endowed her with a good gift. So at this point, what we have is Leah has six sons. And also we are told of a daughter, Dinah, which we'll read about very soon. Zilpah, her maid, has two sons. Bilhah has two. Rachel still does not have any sons until we read these last few verses of this chapter. So let's look here at verses 22 through 24. Then God remembered Rachel. And God gave heed to her and opened her womb. So she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. She named him Joseph, saying, may the Lord give me another son. So throughout this situation, God has remembered Leah and remembered her situation and how she was unloved by Jacob. But here, God remembers Rachel. He remembers Rachel. He knows what she's going through. He knows that she has no sons. And so he gives heed to her. He opens her womb so that she can conceive. And the son that she conceives is a son that we know of very, very well. And I will say, too, out of these sons that we've read of so far, what are some of the names of those sons that really stand out? All the sons are significant, no doubt. They're the sons of Jacob, as far as becoming nations and such. But as far as what sons, what are some of the names that have popped out so far that you think about that we've read of up to this point?
Judah.
And who is the mother of Judah? Leah. Leah is. And why? What's the significance of Judah? That's where Christ. That's the tribe. That's what Christ comes from. He's the Lion of Judah. Who else?
Levi.
Again, who's the mother of Levi? Leah. Leah is. So that's interesting. You think about all the duties that they served as priests and such in the tribe of Levi. So here you have Joseph. And with the statement that she makes about Joseph, she says, God has taken away my reproach. May the Lord give me another son. And so the name Joseph actually means he shall add. What's she actually saying? Give me another son, please, is what she's really saying. She's saying he shall add another son to me. That's what his name means. So Rachel, obviously, I think that she's very much grateful for her son, no doubt about it. But she's also saying, can I have another? Can I have another son? I want more. So that's apparent, too. So Rachel now does have a son. It won't be the only son that she has. We'll talk about Benjamin later. But she does have a son. His name is Joseph. And won't he be significant as we continue our study through Genesis? Yes, Pax.
Back to the mm-hmm. So the Lord does at least 3 years probably go by because she has
Mandrakes didn't work. That's right. That's right. It backfired on Rachel terribly. That's right. Yes. Over and over you see when man tries to take it into his own hands to do something, it falters and fails. But when God does, just be patient for God and God will take care of it, is really what it's saying here. You're exactly right. The mandrakes did not serve whatever purpose they thought it would. That's right. Here's a chart that I pulled from Rose's notes that's outstanding. You can see all the names of the children that we've read of so far and what they mean. Again, the name of Joseph, very interesting. He will add. You can also read the name of Judah, which is bold, means praise. And then down at the bottom, you can also see Leah, meaning judged or vindicated. And we'll be talking more about her very soon, too. But these names had significance. They weren't just named. We talked about this before, just random, you know, names. And that just, you know, that's just a name I liked. They had substance and they had meaning to them. These names did. Depending on what was going on in the lives of maybe their mothers or their family, or what their purpose was. So that's an important thing to note, too. Let's look at verses 25 through 36. This is about 11 verses we're going to read. Now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart. For you yourself know my service which I rendered to you." But Laban said to him, "If it now pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account." He continued, "Name your wages, and I will give it." But he said to him, "You yourself know that I have served you, or how I have served you, and how your cattle has fared with me. For you have had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" So he said, "What shall I give you?" Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything. If you will do this one thing for me, I will again pasture and keep your flock. Let me pass through your entire flock today and remove from there every speckled and spotted sheep and every black one among the lambs and the spotted and speckled among the goats. And such shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come concerning my wages. Everyone that's not speckled and spotted among the goats and the black among the lambs, if found with me, will be considered stolen." Laban said, "Good. Let it be according to your word." So he removed that day the striped, the spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats, everyone with white in it and all the black ones among the sheep, and gave them into the care of his sons. And he put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. And Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. So we read through this text here. Jacob told Laban that he wants to leave. It's time for me to go. And as he wants to leave here, he has already served some 14 years, at least 14 years here, to gain the hand of Leah, gain the hand of Rachel in marriage, although he didn't want to gain the hand of Leah, and that's how it worked out. But he's ready to take his four wives, he's ready to take his children, and he's ready to leave. How does Laban respond to that? You know, "I don't want you to go." He does not want him to go. And that's consistent with Laban, isn't it? As we've read of Laban, every time it seems Laban or Laban's household is involved, the same thing happened with Abraham's servant when Abraham's servant wanted to leave. They don't want him to leave. Stay at least 10 days. Rebecca stay at least 10 days is what they did with that situation. So Laban does not want all, obviously, his daughters and such to leave. He says in verse 27, "If it now pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account." This is an interesting translation. In the New American Standard, it says, "I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account." It is important to note, though, what the King James and New King James says here in verse 27. It states, "For I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me on your account." So that's important to know, too. When you read the word divined, what comes to mind when you read the word divined? Especially in the context of Laban and what we're about to talk about. Right.
It's not going
to God in
prayer, but
right. It's no secret that as we get into chapter 31, he worshiped false gods. And so when you read this in the New American Standard, it makes you think more along the lines of possibly he was divining, like, you know, maybe praying or petitioning his false gods. And something of that nature was involved here. When you look at the other translations, though, it seems very much to see more so that he observed that the Lord had blessed Jacob, and the Lord had blessed him thanks to Jacob. That seems to be a more accurate, I think, translation when you do the comparison there. Laban had learned from observation how blessed he was, thanks to him and thanks to the Lord, that the Lord was with Jacob. He also says to him, name your wages and I will give it. This is an interesting statement. Had Laban ever said this before to Jacob? How did that turn out last time? I mean, he's just going to be just shaking his head like, no, like this is not good. Last time Laban said, name your wages, he said, great, I'll work for you 7 years for Rachel. Laban did not hold to that commitment and to that oath that they had made. So that's interesting to consider that. It backfired on Jacob last time. And so Jacob acknowledged how Laban had very little when Jacob first arrived. And also how everything had seemed to just thrive because of the Lord. The Lord had blessed Jacob abundantly, and because the Lord had blessed Jacob abundantly, Laban was being blessed abundantly. And so he points to that. There's an agreement that he makes here with Laban. Jacob told Laban to not give him anything right off the bat. He said, I don't want anything, but do this for me. And what he asked for, he specifically mentions that he wants to pass through the entire flock and remove all the off color of the flock. Specifically, that would mean the speckled and spotted sheep, the black lambs, the spotted and speckled goats, and that those will be mine. So what would that leave Laban? Laban would have what of the flock? Right. He would have like the white, the unspotted, you know, the best of the best. And I'll take kind of like the cast-offs is what he's saying here. So that's an interesting thing here. Does Laban agree to this? Yeah, he says, good. He says in verse 34, good, let it be according to your word. So these would be Jacob's wages or payment for serving Laban and caring for his flocks. He's saying, I'll serve your flocks. I'll continue to serve you if you give me this. Also in verse 33, Jacob makes an interesting statement. He says, honesty will answer for me later. So he's saying, I'm going to deal honestly in this situation. And that if there are any that are found that are not speckled with me, you can count them as stolen. You can, like, hold me accountable for it. So Laban agrees to it. But remember, last time Laban agreed to something, obviously he didn't hold up his end of the bargain. I really think this is a very interesting text, and I have mulled over this a lot the last several days. As you're reading through these last few verses in verse 34, if you'll look with me at verse 34, it says, Laban said, and what we need to look for is pronouns. Who is it? As you read a he, the statement of a he. But in verse 34, it says, Laban said, good, let it be according to your word. Now, who had asked to go and pass through the flocks and separate them? Jacob had. But if you look at verse 34, it is interesting to see that it says in verse 34, Laban said, good, let it be according to your word. Is the he in verse 35 and throughout these next two verses Jacob or Laban? All right, if you say it's Jacob, continue to verse 36. And he put a distance of 3 days. Who's the he? If it's Jacob, it says Jacob put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. That's where I got very confused. And as I started reading more and more, and you start looking at various translations, it actually seems to seem that it's possible that it's actually Laban who is the one that passes through the flocks. That for some reason, he does not let Jacob go through the flock. Laban passes through the flock, separates the two, and then he puts 3 days' journey between them. But upon the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, I mean, you read it over and over, you keep coming to, all right, Laban lets Jacob go do what he wanted to do, right? But I will say, if you look at some other translations, English Standard Version, if you look at verse 35, it says, so Laban removed on that day. And several other translations do too. And I did not find one translation that actually said, and Jacob removed. But I'll tell you, you read it over and over again from the New King James or the King James, and you think it's Jacob. That really took me back when I first read it that way. But then it does make a little more sense here on this end. This would mean that he's actually acting in honesty here, right? that some of the things that he's trying to do, he's going to try to act more honestly, and he's going to pass through. Laban's the one that's going to pass through and separate them. So when they make this distance of this 3 days journey, what does Jacob actually have at that point? Does he have the speckled and spotted and the black? He's got Laban's. He's going to care for Laban, so he has the unspotted sheep. But over here on the other side, who's going to care for them? Laban's sons have these sheep that belong to who, though? Jacob. But more so, what it's pointing to is who is going to get the speckled and spotted that are born? Jacob. That's what we're about to get into. Confusing. Very confusing. I'm not going to stand up here and say I'm a Bible scholar on this one. But the use of that pronoun he can really be, because it takes you two different directions, whether it's Jacob or Laban.
By taking out the ones that Jacob said, oh, I'll take the off-color.
Right.
I'll go through and I'll get them. That will be my herd to start with. No. He's getting the solids to start with, so he doesn't have anything yet.
Right. And the abundance, right. No doubt, whichever way you take it, the abundance of what Jacob is about to receive is about to come. That's where things really take off as far as his flocks multiply greatly. Yeah, and Laban is the deceitful one consistently throughout his actions. That's a good point.
Sires the next generation that's going to come along that will match Jacob's criteria.
Right. Right.
So he's like
Right. Right. Billy? That's possible. That's possible. He would know better than anyone. Right. That's right. Let's look at what happens right after this, because it ties directly into it. Verse 37. Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white stripes in them, exposing the white which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had peeled in front of the flocks and in the gutters, even in the watering troughs, where the flocks came to drink. And they mated when they came to drink. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the striped, and all the black in the flock of Laban. And he put his own herds apart, and did not put them with Laban's flock. Moreover, whenever the stronger of the flock were mating, Jacob would place the rods in the sight of the flock in the gutters, so that they might mate by the rods. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's. So the man became exceedingly prosperous, and had large flocks, and female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. So at this point, Jacob is caring for those unspotted lambs that belong to Laban. And Jacob has some interesting tactics that he uses to try to, I guess, make it where he's going to get more of the flock, right? Because the agreement's been made. He's going to gain the unspotted, and he's going to gain the spotted and the speckled and such. And so one of the things that he does is that he takes rods of various trees. It mentions almond trees. It mentions poplar and plane trees. And he takes these rods, and he takes them and puts them in specific areas, and he peels stripes in them. Why is he doing this? And again, this is, I've heard several opinions about this. I believe I've heard in a sermon before that someone said, well, he's putting them where they are mating, and when they are mating and they go down into the water, they would rub against these rods. It would make them appear that they were striped or spotted and such. When I would look through various commentaries, I never found anything that was of that nature. And it was more so that there were opinions in livestock that were kind of like superstitions, where they believed that if you had the lambs look at something, or if you had certain types of wood in the water, or things like that, that it could produce, the offspring would be a certain type. Again, it's hard for me to relate to. I'm not a shepherd. I wasn't living during this time. But was it really, this is one thing we can't understand, was it really the rods of the trees alone that caused all of these unspotted sheep, because they're unspotted, right, to produce off-color sheep for Jacob? It wasn't the rods. Kind of just like the mandrake situation. Was it the mandrakes that helped? and cause them to conceive? No. And just like here, what Jacob's doing might be very forthright and might be, you know, a good approach as far as caring for a flock during that time. It's an interesting tactic that he's using. But the fact of the matter is it's God that's allowing him to have increase and make these unspotted sheep that belong to Laban's to conceive over and over again, spotted and speckled and such, so they will belong to him and increase his flock. Yes, Rose?
But he's also promoting animal husbandry. He's choosing the stronger animals.
Right, and he does get into that too.
His healthy offspring.
That's right.
To breed.
That's right.
Whereas the weaker ones, he's like,
yeah. You're exactly right. And that's what he does. He takes the stronger of the flock, he puts them by the rods, right? So he's really trying to get the best. And Laban is going to get the weaker and the more feeble of the flock. That's right. That's right. So that's what he does. So the outcome overall, as you read this, is that the stronger flock now belongs to Jacob. What was once Laban's that had some strength in it, obviously, is now transitioned. God has blessed Jacob abundantly. He now has the more prosperous flock. And the stronger flock. But again, who caused Jacob to prosper? It's the Lord. And we are going to see Jacob acknowledging that here in this next chapter. Okay? Let's look on at chapter 31. Let's look at these first four verses. Now, yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Now he's doing it. That's right. He's in control. That's right. Yeah, that's right. And he's able to make it where he's prospering, very much so, thanks to the Lord. Right. And in verse 40, the verse you just said, that he even took the flock and had them face toward the striped and the black. It almost seems like it was a visual, like he felt like if the animals, the sheep, look at them, that they will, that's what it seems to point to, but I don't know, again. That's what it seems to point to, is a little bit of a superstition or a belief that this could help in some way, kind of like the mandrakes in some way. Mm-hmm. It could be because he points to the Lord. I mean, he doesn't say anything about the rods in chapter 31. The rods didn't do anything as far as like what he says. He says it's the Lord that caused me to increase. The Lord has blessed me. The Lord did all this. So you're right. It might be the Lord said do this. Might have happened. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. It would tie some things together for sure if that was the case. Uh-huh. All right, these first four verses of chapter 31. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father he has made all his wealth. Jacob saw that the attitude of Laban, or saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. When the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to his flock in the field. So there's a complaint here by Laban's sons. The complaint that they make here is that Jacob has taken away everything that belonged to our father. Why do they care, by the way? It's because it's their father, first of all, and also, would this actually belong to them eventually, too, as an inheritance, possibly? Very much so. So they're invested in this. So they're saying everything that was his is now Jacob's. He's taken all of his wealth away. How is Laban's attitude toward Jacob now? Not good. The New American Standard says that it was not friendly toward him. It was not a friendly type of attitude toward him whatsoever. And so I think you can understand why he would feel this way in many ways, is because if he looks at it from the wrong perspective and thinks about the Lord not being involved, he might think he's being robbed. But the fact of the matter is the Lord is very much with Jacob, and he's doing it in a righteous way. Yes. That's right. That's right. So the Lord gives instructions to Jacob. This is very important here in verse 3. He tells him, you need to return to the land of your fathers. It's time to leave. It's time to return back to your relatives, and I will be with you. So he's telling him, go back to Canaan. At this point, how many years have actually passed? It's right around 20. And that's revealed as we read through chapter 31. It's right around 20 years. 7 for serving, for the hand, ended up being for Leah. And then you have 7 for Rachel. And then there's 6 years that are included here where he is taking care of the flock of Laban. Let's look at verses 5 through 16. Verse 5. So Jacob sent and called to Rachel and Leah to his flock in the field. That's verse 4. Verse 5. And he said to them, I see your father's attitude that it is not friendly toward me as formerly. But the Lord God of my father has been with me. You know that I have served your father with all my strength. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. If he spoke thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, the stripe shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth striped. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and has given them to me. And it came about at the time when the flock were mating that I lifted up my eyes and I saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in a dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes now and see that all the male goats are mating. They are speckled, striped, and spotted. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise and leave this land and return to the land of your birth. Rachel and Leah said to him, do we still have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he sold us and has entirely consumed our purchase price. Surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. So this time, he doesn't go back to Laban and have another conversation with Laban. He's not getting anywhere very effectively with Laban, has he? But he could have done that. What he does instead, he goes and speaks to his two wives as far as Leah and Rachel. He has four wives, but he speaks to Leah and Rachel. And he says several things to them. He says, he makes them aware of Laban's change in countenance. Were they aware of that also? They were. And we find that out here in these last few verses that we just read. They were aware of how Laban's attitude had changed toward them. Also, he acknowledged the Lord, that the Lord had allowed him to be so blessed. He also acknowledged the hard work that he had done for Laban over the years, how hard he had worked and labored for their dad. And also, he revealed that an angel of the Lord spoke to him in a dream. That's revealed later in the text that we were just reading there, that connecting to the spotted and how he was changing his wages 10 times. And even in that case of verse 8, if he spoke, the speckled shall be your wages, then it would bring forth speckled and striped and vice versa. In verse 11, the angel of the Lord said to me in a dream, Jacob, I said, here I am. Verse 12, it said, now lift up your eyes and see all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled. This was a purpose of the Lord that he gained all this livestock. So what was Leah and Rachel's response to Jacob bringing this to their attention? We agree. Do whatever the Lord said. And there's more detail to that. But that's exactly why. They're in agreement. Because they said, do we have any inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned to him as foreigners? Speaking of how they're treated by Laban. Also making a point that all the wealth that God had given to Laban is now Jacob's. Let's do what the Lord said to do. And so they're going to depart. They're going to head toward Canaan. I hope to get farther, but we still have several verses left. But I encourage you all to go on and read the rest of chapter 31 if you have not yet. And then I believe we'll be in chapter 32 also on Wednesday. Okay? Thank you all for your kind attention. Thank you all.